Hello, and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life. I'm Brock Dittus.
And I'm Aaron Flores, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that is finally getting its footing in the new studio. And broadcasting. Bringing you somewhat somewhat irreverent conversations.
And finally getting our footing.
I shouldn't have said it. Somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering bicycling, trains and transit, adventures, life hacks, and choking on Skittles.
That's right.
And today, Jeremy Goes Ham Radio.
That's right. Jeremy Kitchen, listener to the podcast. Hello, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How about
and also
you?
Donor to the podcast. Thank you so much. Much appreciated. Did you get your patch in the mail yet?
I have not.
Okay, it's on the way.
I have stickers, but no patch.
Okay, there we go. Well, it's who's doing our mail?
We should get on that intern.
For sure. Yeah. Okay. So we'll talk to the intern. We will. We'll tell him a thing or two.
Or
and
her.
Then yes. I mean, not to be yes. We're not going to identify this person by
right.
gender or by anything else, except to say that this person will be sending those very soon. So. So thank you for coming in. This is a show all about ham radio, which is exciting. It's something that you do.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about that in just a couple minutes. So first, Aaron.
Yes, sir.
You and I had a very exciting weekend.
Didn't we?
It was like more exciting, I think, than most times we come in to do a show.
I'm kind of, I don't know about you, I'm still kind of paying for it, actually.
Yes, as in you're in pain?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
I actually called for a ride to work.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You mean like mid-ride you called
Sunday
for?
Sunday night.
Oh,
no,
okay.
Sunday night.
You arranged like, a ride to work.
I'm not going to be able to do this.
You know, the thing is, I feel like no one can bicycle 7 days a week. And if you do something really intense when it comes to bicycling on the weekend, that means that you are going to need assistance getting to work at some point.
Or getting somewhere, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Or going to the grocery store. Or going to the beer mongers in Southeast Division and 12, for example. But yeah, there are many places that you would need help getting to. So you took a ride on Monday morning.
So I took a ride this morning, yeah.
It makes sense to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the first thing was Saturday morning, we had the disaster relief trials, which was thanks to the donations. This is one reason that I'm glad that we have donors who are sending us monies and things, including Jeremy. Thank you so much. Because... the disaster relief trials are not free.
They are not unless you're a bike messenger.
Unless you're a bike messenger.
Which we are not.
That's true. Yeah. If there's only some way. We're not bike messengers. There's no way we can spin this.
This podcast is a message.
That's
and
right.
We talk about bikes.
Right. Exactly. And people listen to it sometimes while they're bicycling. And so that means that, right, we're messengers?
Right.
We're not.
Right. No.
So we had to pay the registration fees. But the Sprocket Podcast donors paid for that registration.
Thank you, donors.
Thank you so much. We're going to see if how much salvageable audio we got from the day. We carried a recorder with us on the event. So we got a bunch of stuff.
I will say maybe more salvageable audio than the putting together of the studio.
Uh-huh.
Than that recording.
Okay.
But far less than the cross race recording.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll find out whatever we can figure. But yes, we do have audio of the event, so we will we'll spare you most of the details now. Aside to say that it was a lot of fun. Team Sincerity, which is you and I, and Daniel Harkins, the muscle of Team Sincerity.
He's
always been.
He was never without, what did we estimate, 120 pounds of cargo?
Yes, yeah. So
was the minimum that he carried.
We had three bicycles. You had every bike is a cargo bike in your estimation, so you had your bike.
Correct. I had the Red Hair Among Horses.
Technically not a cargo bike. Technically.
Yes.
In classification.
It is not classified as a cargo bike.
In taxonomy.
Yes.
Yeah. But
taxonomically not a cargo bike.
But you had a bob trailer attached to that. I had my Tom's tall bike, Tom's cargo bikes.
Taxonomically a cargo bike.
Right. It goes both ways. Yeah.
As because it's made by Tom's Cargo Bikes.
And it has cargo capacity, so little cargo capacity. The bike itself is cargo. and I pedaled that around. So, yeah. But Harkins was riding Ross Putnam from Base Camp Brewing. And thank you, Base Camp, for indirectly sponsoring Team Sincerity on this ride. Yeah, we had his enormous Metrofeet's cargo bike. So it's a Bachfeet style with a large box out front. And the bike itself weighs...
The largest box out front.
Oh, my goodness.
I would say it's probably at least 1.5 times as much as any other Metrofeet's out there.
Yeah, it's like the bike weighs 200 pounds on its own.
Probably.
Yeah, and so in addition to that, at least 120 pounds of cargo that Harkins was pedaling throughout town. So,
is it E-Assist at least?
No.
Nope.
Wow.
No, no. Yeah. But Harkins is a guy who, for his job, rides his bike about 50 to 60 miles a day. And so he's been training for this for some time. I can only assume that this was his life's trajectory.
Yes.
Yeah, he's been
This
he's been
like
preparing.
Tuesday for him.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, Tuesday on Saturday. So he showed up and helped us out. It was super cool. But yeah,
you
it was
know,
fun.
And actually, now that I think about this, he kind of gave up what would probably be like a money-making day for him.
A lucrative work day. Yeah.
Right. Right.
We owe him
Saturdays, some money. Saturdays are kind of like where he's doing a lot of his deliveries, where people are like making more orders.
Yeah, for sure.
This just occurred to me like just now in this moment. So,
yeah. And I offered to buy him a beer and I did buy him a few beers, but he deserves more.
Yeah.
So,
we may need to send like a 6-pack his way.
Harkins, if you're hearing this. Yeah. Several 6-packs in honor of the lost wages, but Team Sincerity. So Disaster Relief Trials, for anybody who does not know, is it's kind of a play acting of how cargo bikes could respond to an earthquake or other natural disaster to help people get emergency supplies when the grid goes down.
Yeah, it's like half practice for when the big one happens, half cargo bike race.
Yeah, yeah, and maybe fully both.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was it was a good time. It's super cool. It's been going for how many years? Like 5 years running now. And
yep. This was the fifth one.
It was cool to see people still doing it. You know, it's a partnership with the Portland Bureau of Emergency Management. So they were there. They were on site. They were hanging out. And community responders were practicing their ham radio skills.
Yes, ham radio was well represented there.
Yeah, yeah. So anyways, that's what happened there. A cool thing about the disaster relief trials this year was that there were some folks from Japan who showed up.
From, I'm going to slaughter the city name.
You're going to do better than me.
Tsukuba.
Okay, I trust you because I did not remember the name.
Tsukuba.
Okay. Yeah, and they came all the way from Japan to practice their skills in the disaster relief trials here in Portland.
Yes. Special shout out to Chun, who I just saw like on the way here.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. He and Tad took an extra day. Tad actually is going to be here for a couple more days.
Yeah, Tad is the
professor.
Yeah, the graphic design professor who headed up the team of Team Japan. The rest of them are college students.
Yeah, so they all left yesterday.
Okay.
And today, Chun had an extra day.
There we go.
For whatever reason, to do sightseeing and hanging out.
So. Is Chun the one that you gave the sock to?
No.
No, okay.
I can't remember his name.
That's
but
okay.
The names are beginning to connect with me.
Right,
now.
Right. But it was cool because we spent a lot of time with them because we also went on the rice cooker ride.
Which was amazing.
Yeah, which happened the day after on Sunday, yesterday.
Yeah, and this is something that like I wanted to kind of, I don't know, interview them about was like how does the disaster relief trials compare to like, because they lived through the earthquake, they lived through a time in which like things were shut down, you know,
they have experience with disasters
and that's part of like how the rice cooker ride became a thing for them,
right?
Was, you know, they're living outside of Tokyo, most of the resources are going to the big cities like Tokyo, and so, you know, for a while they were kind of like high and dry.
Right.
And they survived by, you know, by bikes and carting things around by bike. And then also by these wood fired, you know, rice stoves.
Yeah. The rice cooker was sweet because it was this aluminum enclosure. It was aluminum. It seemed like it would have been.
It was metal.
It was metal
sort.
Of some kind. Yeah. It was fairly lightweight.
Yeah.
And it was transportable by bike, but they were able to make a bunch of rice and hence a bunch of rice balls, and they fed all of us.
Yeah, at first I was like, there's no way like they'll be able to feed everybody. Like I was tempted to, at one point,
to
grab some food.
Oh, okay.
because we were right there in Cathedral Park.
Yeah.
And I went up and got myself a coffee. And while I was there, I was like, you know, there's a burrito joint over here. There's like this diner over here.
You could have had any number of of food options.
Because I was doubtful. But not sure. only did they feed us all, like there was stuff left over.
Yeah, they fed us fully.
Yeah.
It was great, though, because, yeah, they made two full pots of rice to feed how many, like 30 gathered people or something?
Yeah.
And, yeah, everyone ate to their heart's content. I brought some sauces just for fun.
Yeah.
They liked Portland ketchup, which was cool. Portland Ketchup Company makes a great natural ketchup. Corn fructose syrup.
Right, no high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah. And so, yeah, they tried that out. It's not necessarily, I don't put ketchup on my rice ordinarily, but I figure with all the other sauces I brought, I should bring something that's uniquely Portland
to
the event.
Sure.
And they popped open a bottle of sake that they brought from Japan.
Yes,
and,
they did.
Yeah, and they brought this traditional square cup that they drank it out of.
You take a sip out of and pass it.
So how was the sake, Aaron?
Yes, I had a sip of sake.
Yeah. It's a slippery slope.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's what Anna said over the phone when I was talking to her that night. It was like, should I be worried? Like, in the past, like, month and a half, you've had more drinks than in the past, like, 30 years.
Next week we'll be like, why is Aaron Ben at like the Japanese restaurant every night for dinner?
Right. I will say it went down a lot smoother than I was expecting. You know,
danger.
Watch like movies and television, and you see like, you know, the white guy in the Japanese restaurant or whatever, like drink sake, and they're like, whoa, whatever. and it wasn't anywhere. It didn't burn at all. Like
right. Oh, it was
just,
a very
it just
good.
Went down,
it was a good sake.
Yeah,
it was
kind of had a really sweet finish.
Mm-hmm, yeah, yeah. I was thinking back. I was telling you about this. The Last Samurai was the movie that Tom Cruise plays, like some guy that gets stranded in Japan.
The Last Samurai, starring Tom Cruise.
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember how it works out. Like, I forget why he's being rehabilitated or something like that. Like he falls. Have you seen it, Jeremy?
Not in a long time.
Okay. I just remember the scene at which, like, some Japanese family is taking care of Tom Cruise, and he, like, wakes up, and they give him some sake to make him feel better. He's okay, but he doesn't speak any Japanese, but he really likes sake, and eventually they stop giving it to him, and then he just, like, bangs on the wall screaming, sake! And so, yeah. Anyways, that was the thing that I thought of first, and the thing I always
really
think about.
I really want to look this up right now.
See, stave it
off.
I won't. But, yeah, anyways, that was the thing that that happened. So, all told, we've got some audio that we're going to stitch together. So,
yep.
Whatever happened. I know Team Japan and Tad, who is the professor from Japan, he was on the 6 o'clock news yesterday.
Yeah.
Did coworkers talk to you today?
No. Did coworkers talk to you?
Yeah, they were like, hey, I saw you on the TV. Yeah.
Huh.
So,
because I was way more prominent on the television than you were.
Yeah, I know, right?
Now I'm upset.
Oh, well, I mean, maybe they just didn't see you in time to tell you.
They're intimidated by my star power.
I would imagine so. So anyways, that was what we did this weekend. It was super cool. And again, thanks to all of our listeners who are donors because they...
You made it happen. You
made it happen. Thank you. You, listener, donor, thank you.
And you, Jeremy, you. Right across.
That's
right. Is this awkward? Like
all this finger pointing. Yeah. So I mentioned the ham radio connection, but we had you in talk ham radio.
Mm-hmm.
So this might be a good way to transfer in. But before I do that, let me just say that should you be looking for something that is not sake, but you still want to slake that thirst and you are screaming and you are being rehabilitated in the house of a Japanese family and... yeah, say that you need someone to bring you something. You might be screaming IPA into the corner of the room because someone was bringing you IPAs and then they stopped and then you're angry about it. Well, fear not because you can walk yourself to the Beer Mongers at Southeast Division 12.
That's pretty good. It's like, where is he going here?
No, they're a great spot. The cool thing is they're hosting the Kimi Cross event again. It's
yes!
Alley Cross, Cyclocross sort of race. Or I guess Alley Cat is the... It's a hybrid.
Yes. Well, yeah.
It's a little scavenger hunt around
Alley
town.
Cross, yeah. Yes.
Involving some mud. So that's going to be happening. It starts at the Beer Mongers. It is December 11th. Am I right? Yes, December 11th, Kimmy Cross at the Beer Mongers, and we are going to be the Black Knights.
Yes.
Which means that we're going to be giving out good fortune to anyone who finds us.
Yeah, last year we raced, and we had some audio from that.
Right.
And this year we were asked to kind of like participate in a different way. And
how much of that do you think has to do with the fact that the audio from last year is mostly of you swearing when things
happen? We can't have this again.
The ride along for Kimmy Cross last year was Aaron just saying, fuck, shit, fuck. So
this is bad publicity here.
It'll be even more exciting this year because I imagine there will be some sort of audio component to what we do.
Right, of course. We'll figure it out, but yeah. I'm imagining.
Yeah.
I don't know. Some Nerf guns might be involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Black Knight is a figure in this sort of event in which they roam and they dole out good fortune.
Yes.
It's kind of like catching the white rabbit or something. You get wishes. So we're going to give wishes to people, and their wishes will be for more points, probably, or something like that.
But first they have to do our bidding.
Yes.
Whatever that might be.
Audio. They have to give us tape.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's not real tape. Metaphoric tape. Yeah, but that's happening at the Beer Mongers, and the Beer Mongers at Southeast Division 12 is the place. That's the place you want to be for events like this, and for beer, and for live sports with sound. So, yeah. Anyways, that was something I wanted to bring up, but we were talking ham radio and disaster relief. So, Jeremy, how long have you been doing ham radio?
I got licensed about 4 years ago. I was trying to do some ham radio stuff while I lived in Los Angeles and kind of dropped it off. And then last year, a friend of mine was like, hey, we should do some ham radio stuff for Cycle Oregon
because
they had the women's ride this year. And their whole thing was like, hey, guys, you should come out here and help support the ride. And he had found out that they use ham radio operators on their SAG vehicles and that sort of thing. So,
and Cycle Oregon is it's an event across Oregon, various places, depending on the year, in which people who have paid the entrance fee can go out. They have a supported ride. They get to go and ride in some of the best parts of the state. They hang out in cool small towns across the state, and they provide economic infusions by hanging out there and whatnot and renting space. And but ham radio support is one of their aspects.
Yes.
Nice.
So in each of the SAG vehicles, there is a ham radio operator who is monitoring communications and also doing some paperwork because the driver is usually dealing with the bike or with the actual incident where the ham is doing paperwork like, oh, I picked this person up and we dropped them off here.
Fastidious records of what happened.
Yeah. It also allows the driver to focus on the important thing of driving the vehicle that's
right.
full of people and bicycles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was doing that and have been trying to find more events like that to participate with. Because the first time I went, it was the women's ride in June, and I was really nervous. I was shadowing someone. I was like, oh, I'm going to screw this up. And then it was fine. By the end of the day, I was like on the radio. And
I'm a pro.
Yeah, yeah. And then I was on the weekend ride, which was in July. I was the ham for my SAG vehicle. And
nice.
So it was just me and my driver all day.
There we go.
For 2 days. And it was a lot of fun.
So what kinds of things were you communicating?
Mostly like where we were and what we were doing. So if we turned around or if we dropped someone off or picked somebody up, or if we were like, hey, we're stopped to like help out with the mechanical issue or something. The ham is also involved with, any kind of on course emergency.
Okay.
So, like, if we come across a crash or something, we call it in, and then they dispatch an ambulance or whatever needs to happen, and we're supposed to stay there until it's all taken care of and, like, transport the bike or the person or whatever needs to happen.
Okay.
And the ham is, like, the person who's, like, keeping track of what all is going on while that's happening. And
sure.
We, since there are multiple SAG vehicles on course, one of the things is to communicate back to the SAG lead so that they can say, actually, we need you to move. Or on the second day of the weekend ride, it was raining really hard in the morning, and so most people didn't get out on the course. So
okay.
We got to our first checkpoint, and they said, just sit there and wait.
Like, nobody's riding bikes yet.
Yeah, we had counted, like, 15 people on the way to the first checkpoint or something like that, so...
That is an interesting aspect of supported rides. Like, I haven't been on... I don't think I've been on a supported ride at all. Have you?
No.
Okay. And it's not like, I mean,
I've had other people carry my stuff and then gone somewhere.
Right.
But I don't know if that counts.
Right, right. And I'm not here to dog on supported rides, because I'm definitely like, you know, that's, for some people, that's the only way they ever get out to do anything adventurous, because they don't have like the confidence or whatever to do the kind of riding,
yeah,
or in the places
they're
at.
Whatever gets you out, man.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. But I'm not the sort of, like, I can't afford to go on supported rides. So that's the reason I don't. Did you get to ride any of the portions of these things that you were helping out with?
I did the week-long ride, but I also was just a paid member or paid rider for that.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. So you were a ham operator for other auxiliary events, but for the actual Cycle Oregon event, like the week-long thing, you were a participant.
Right. Yeah. I did have my radio with me. They encouraged me to bring my radio in case we came across anything.
Sure.
And interestingly enough, while we were pulled over helping someone with a mechanical issue, we watched a person fall and break their collarbones.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
we were
first
responders on the scene, and we had our radio, so we were able to call it in immediately. So that
Holy
was
shit. Was that, what did that look like?
I thought his face was going to be messed up, but he just fell.
Yeah.
And then we went over to check him out, and I was, you know, making sure his bike was okay. While someone else was taking care of the person.
Yeah.
And at the time, we didn't realize what the severity of it was. But he's like, oh, my shoulder hurts or whatever. And someone rolls up.
Yeah.
Someone rolls up and they're like, I'm an ER doctor. Is there anything I can do? And it's like, yes. Can you examine this person? The guy felt his shoulder or whatever. He's like, yeah, he's got a broken collarbone.
You're screwed, sir.
Yep. He's done for the day. Fortunately, it was on the last day of the event.
Oh,
so
wow.
Didn't lose a lot of it, but...
So that's the pro tip. If you're going to get hurt on the last day of the event so you don't ruin the whole thing.
And right next to a guy with a radio.
That's right, yeah. And right as an ER doctor is rolling out.
Yes, yeah. Just make sure all of those things are going to happen, yeah.
You've got a couple of radios that you brought along with you.
I do.
I'm assuming the ones with the long antenna here are the ham radios themselves.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have two radios. The bigger one is a little bit more expensive, but they're like the small one here is a Baofeng. It's about $50, and I think the antenna was $100. So
okay,
the antenna is sold separately.
No, it comes with an antenna, but everybody suggests that you put a different one on because the antennas they come with are not usually very good. These are much better antennas.
Okay,
I don't know exactly why. I just
know
that they are, and nobody's said anything about it. So
you trust the people that you're listening to.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So tell me, first of all, you were saying that you got involved with ham radio before you moved here. Was that before you were interested in bicycling particularly? Or?
Oh, no, it was actually because of bicycling.
Okay. So that got you into ham.
Yeah.
Okay.
So a friend of mine and I, we went to Sequoia National Park. We rode from Three Rivers, California up to Giant Forest, which is about 25 miles and 6,000 feet of climbing. So it is straight up for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And we had brought two little FRS radios with us.
That's a family radio system? Is that
right? It's unlicensed. Anybody can use them. You can get them at Walmart for $20.
Not restricted.
Or something like that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And
can I sing into those?
You can actually sing into those. Yes.
Because you can't sing into a ham radio.
You cannot sing into a ham radio.
You cannot transmit music on ham on amateur bands.
It's
no.
illegal.
It is illegal.
Okay.
Even if you just have a naturally melodious voice.
Right.
Like
so
I
be
do.
Careful.
Right.
I'd like to see the court case for that. But, yeah.
I just have a naturally melodious voice, and it happened to be in a cadence.
The prosecution would like to argue that Aaron Flores has a naturally melodious voice.
The defense. The defense.
Oh, wait. Excuse me. Yes. Would like to argue that he was singing into the radio. Yeah. So, anyways.
Sorry.
But you were doing this ride. How much climbing? How much
it was
elevation?
About 6,000 feet.
That's a lot.
Over 25 miles, yeah.
Over 20. That's a day's ride.
Yeah. It
so
was
that's
5.5 hours.
Holy
to get
shit.
Up. Yeah.
How did you feel after it was done?
Oh, dead.
Yeah.
Especially because on the way back down, there was a little bump.
Yeah.
And it was probably half a mile long. And I'm just like, oh,
as
why?
In bump, as in like you had to climb some.
You had to climb some more. It was not all downhill.
Okay.
Yeah. But we had brought these little radios with us because we knew we were going to ride at different paces. And so we would have pretty good line of sight because if you've ever been up this road, you can look down and see the 16 miles that you just rode.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cause you can see almost all the way from the top to Three Rivers. And then at some point you go behind the mountain and now we can't communicate with each other. And he mentioned something along the lines of, yeah, well, next time we do that, we should just get our ham licenses and we can buy radios cause we can use a repeater. And a repeater is basically a radio that sits on top of a mountain, and it receives the signal and then transmits it back out.
Do most mountains have repeaters?
I don't know if I would say most, okay. But most repeaters are on mountains.
Okay, there we go.
A lot of the mountains around Portland have repeaters on
okay.
them.
Okay. So in Oregon,
not all mountains have repeaters.
But all repeaters,
Repeaters are on mountains.
Yes. Or tall buildings or whatever. Right. Yeah.
Right. So that was the problem with the FRS, the family radio system, is that you couldn't, like, they go out of range.
Once you were around a corner, you've got no...
Yeah, there's a large obstruction in the way.
You need line of sight,
yep.
basically.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they, like, some, depending on the power you have, you can, like, either punch through it or... I don't know the exact physics of it, but, like, your signal can kind of go around the mountain.
Okay.
But FRS radios are limited to half watt, which is, like, really, I don't know.
Well, these are batteries, right?
Yeah.
Or these whatever they're operated on.
My ham radios here are 5 watts.
Okay.
And those are just handheld. And
that's
you can use
times.
Up to 50 watts on that particular band.
Oh, wow.
If you have, like, a mobile radio in your car or something like that.
Okay.
And some people put mobile radios on their bikes. They have, like, a big car battery.
Sure.
Yeah. Ethan Jewett.
Yeah, well, he did, actually. Back when we talked to him in 2013, I was just looking at a picture of that the other day.
Oh.
Because he had it was a Bullitt cargo bike with a big box on the front, and he had this enormous telescoping antenna.
Yeah.
That he could...
I can't remember how many feet it was. It was like 12 feet or something.
It was pretty... It was at least twice as tall as us.
Yes.
So, yeah, enormous, but pretty cool. So, yeah, there are options as far as as far as how much power you transmit with.
Right. That was probably for a different band than these are made for, though.
Sure.
There are lots of frequencies that are available to hams.
Yeah. How does that compare? I mean, ham has how many options as compared to, like, family radio system has, what, 25 channels or something like that?
Yeah. Like, I think it's 21 channels.
Okay.
Ham radios, like, these in particular are what are known as 2-meter 440. So it's like 2 meter is the wavelength
of the
signal.
Uh-huh.
And then 440 is the 440 centimeters, is the other wavelength. The frequency, like it's 2 meters and I think 1 meter.
Are we talking like megahertz?
440 megahertz.
Okay.
But 2 meter is 140 ish. So it's kind of like what people call it.
Is this where I get to say what's the frequency, Kenneth?
But yes.
No, the
what's the frequency kitchen?
Nice.
Yes. Ham radio signals, like the radio waves themselves, are mm-hmm. these the kind of radio waves that that bounce around and can avoid some of those obstacles, or is that why the repeaters are there?
That's one of the reasons the repeaters are there.
Okay.
There are on some of the different frequencies, so there are like 10 meter and 20 meter and even higher frequency, or not higher frequencies, but higher wavelengths. They're actually lower frequencies.
Okay.
That can do very long distance communication. So mm-hmm. one of the activities that hams participate in is something called DXing, where you find a mountaintop and put up your big, you know, dipole antenna, which is about 20 feet long, and try to talk to Brazil,
okay,
or you know, Florida or something like that.
Yeah,
and you don't need like any special permit to be up there, and
well, you might
that.
Need a permit to be on the mountaintop, but as far as like the transmission, you're already licensed for that.
Okay,
so
if you have your ham radio
if
license,
you have your ham radio license, and that depending on like there are three different levels of ham radio license,
uh-huh.
and they open up different frequencies and different what are called modes.
What are these levels?
There's
technician, general.
Come on, it's on the technician test. Actually, I don't know.
Is it really?
I don't know if it is. I'm kidding.
Because Aaron Flores has been preparing for his test.
A supreme master.
Amateur extra.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's almost the same thing.
Yeah.
Sorcerer
yeah.
supreme.
So,
just about, actually.
What are the differences in these levels? Like, what can these various certifications do?
You get access to different frequencies and different what are called modes. So
okay.
a mode, like these radios are FM voice, and they have some capability for doing digital. There are some fancier ones of this, like the FM voice style that do a thing called APRS, which is like a positioning system.
Okay.
So you can transmit your position, and there are like monitoring stations that will put that on the internet for you.
Okay.
So you can like look at a map of where all the hams are.
I see.
Then there are other modes that are digital modes that, or they're
is it like being verified on Twitter?
No, it's just more like they're these modes have potential for either like more interference being produced, or you just have to know like how you're using them or something. I'm not 100% certain.
Okay, sure. And that's okay. That's why you have to be a supreme sorcerer.
Yeah.
Right.
Most of what I do is this, and you only need a technician for that.
Okay.
So. And there's like a new thing where people are transmitting like data.
Yes.
Through ham. Mm-hmm. And now is that like with one of the various levels, or can just a technician do that?
I think a technician can do some of it. Okay. Because I think APRS you can do with a technician, because it's just built into your radio and okay. It just transmits your frequency or transmits your location and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that was something. So I'm studying also with Aaron Parecki.
Right.
That's something that he's really like interested in.
It's both
like
of you want
to
get
how to transmit data via radio wave.
Yeah, because everybody, like when the grid goes down, we're still going to have laptops, and we're still going to want the internet.
Probably.
And if you know how to get data across ham radio legally in an accepted manner, then you can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was actually one of the things they were doing on Saturday. So I had totally forgotten about the disaster relief trials, but I had my radio on Saturday morning, and I heard the net start up. The net is basically, like a ham radio net is a group of people who come on a frequency to like participate in an activity or something. And
it's kind of like a chat room or a...
Yeah, except there's like generally what's called a net control operator. And so that person is who you talk to. You don't talk to other people on the net. You talk to the net control, and if they need to relay stuff.
Gotcha. Kind of like when at work, Aaron, you and I, we talk to the central radio operator. We don't talk to each other.
Correct.
Yeah,
okay.
You can probably hear each
other,
right?
Is
yes.
Highly discouraged to talk to other drivers.
And yet people do all the time. God damn it. So, yes.
Yeah.
But ham radio, because they're licensed, they're far more disciplined. And mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the idea, anyway. I've been on some where music is the norm.
I was going to say, yeah. So yeah. what's the deal? Like, first of all, what are some things that are regulated? What can you do? What can't you do?
You cannot swear.
Okay.
Shit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can't play music. You can't use it for any commercial operations. So
okay.
If you're, one of the things I'm not 100% certain if this is why Cycle Oregon has their ambulances with just commercial radios in them instead of the drivers being hams.
Oh, sure.
But I think it's because those drivers, those EMTs are being paid.
Okay,
so
right.
Since they're being paid for their services, they can't actually operate a ham radio.
Because they're no longer amateurs.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Whereas if you're in a support vehicle as a volunteer,
right.
Then you're just a volunteer.
Right.
So not commercial.
You can't be paid for your services. You're also not supposed to
Could I like tell another ham operator, like I'm going down to Albertsons because it's like mm-hmm. 2-for-1? You
yes.
know, is that,
and then they
that's
say,
not
hey,
a commercial.
Get me a sandwich and I'll pay you half. Is that, yeah.
If you did that every day, someone might be like, you're advertising. That's not legit. But if you're just talking to people, it's probably fine.
Okay.
So
okay.
I'm not the FCC, though.
I don't
so.
Go right. to Albertsons anyways.
So the FCC regulates ham radio just like they do AM and FM and all that stuff, which they don't regulate us, which is why we can say like the fuck word
Shit.
And stuff. Yeah. But no, that's interesting to me because you don't think about ham radio. Most people don't think about ham radio. As far as I can tell, like when you bring this up to people who are not into ham, like what do people say?
I imagine a lot of people mistake you for like a CB operator.
Yes, that happens a lot.
Yeah, can I use your CB?
Well, what is the
10,
difference
4.
Between CB and ham?
It's different frequencies mm-hmm. and also different regulation or limitations on what your radios can do.
Okay,
so ham radio is not just these little handheld radios that you can talk to each other with. There's so many things that you can do. It's a very broad term.
Yeah.
Whereas CB is very specific to like just voice communication across the airwaves.
Citizens band.
Citizens band.
Yes. Does HAM stand for something?
No.
No.
It's okay.
Amateur radio is the official like name, but
it
HAM's...
It was an epithet originally.
Really?
Yes.
Kind of like Fred?
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently like any time like someone did something that was like amateurish back in whenever like the birth of radio or whatever.
What a ham.
It was considered a ham or hamming it.
Interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
I know ham fisted came out of Correct. Radio.
Yeah, because you're clumsy and you're not, yeah.
Or I thought it was more about, like, if you're using Morse code, you're, like, punching the...
Yeah.
Something.
Oh, sure. Just like... Like that? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. I suppose I should give a shout out to Ham Fisted Radio, which is no longer in production, but one of the better Portland podcasts of the past 5 to 6 years. Yeah, it was just Ham Fisted Radio was the name. But yes, I like the term. There's a great affection for that for me. So tell me, what do you hope to do with Ham Radio? Like, coming up in the next couple of years, what do you have big plans as far as, are you planning to join the disaster relief trials in the next couple of years? Are you planning to help out with Cycle Oregon again? Is there anything else on the horizon?
Yeah, I do want to help out with Cycle Oregon again. I'm also trying to find or like put together a list of events that I can participate in and help with. I know that the Oregon International Air Show, I know the bridge pedal. I actually worked bridge pedal as like a, I had my radio on me and was riding around, but yeah. it was official, I think, but not, it was a strange day as far as
it was
as
a .org, not a .com.
Yeah.
No, a bridge pedal is the event where they shut down all the bridges in Portland and let people ride bicycles over them, which sounds pretty cool.
Yes.
It's the sort of thing
and
that I would like to do
it's
someday.
It's a fundraiser, so you generally have to pay admission.
Oh, yes.
But it's a good cause. You can sometimes get in like on a volunteer position.
Right,
get your admission sort of waived.
In no way would we advocate that anyone ride the bridge pedal without paying the admission fee. That
no.
would be wrong.
I mean,
ethically.
There's many ways you can volunteer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Services.
You can get into that. Yeah. In no way would we recommend that you do anything else. But yes. So other things.
So disaster relief trials, since I remember it, I want to try to participate next year. I think I want to, because I don't have a cargo bike, I would be doing the Bob trailer kind
there
of setup.
Go. Yeah.
But I think it might be more interesting to do the ham side of things.
Yeah.
Especially, I believe the local neighborhood emergency teams are who put on the ham radio part of that.
Yes.
And so the neighborhood emergency team is something I want to get involved with as well. And ARES, which is the Amateur Radio Emergency Service. And I think the Portland Net and Multnomah County ARES, they work very closely together. So like
I think
ARES
was there, like represented.
Yeah,
but I think it was because of Net.
Because
or something
of Net?
Like that.
Okay.
I'm not certain on that.
I know just that was what was on the side of the truck.
Okay.
Or the trailer.
Yeah.
I guess.
And on the shirt.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
I think.
I don't know. I would be interested in like ham as an operator or an operand in the disaster relief trials, you know, how do you incorporate that? 'Cause like there's a cool stand and like, you know, you can go up to it and you can learn about it, but that requires you to go up to some strangers and talk to them at a booth, which generally we don't necessarily like to do. Like, you know, it takes a certain special extrovert to do that. And so I would be very interested at like each of the stations if there was like a ham operator there, like sort of calling in. And I don't know, like, if you can do this via ham, because maybe this is like a violation because you're making up, you know, you're communicating a fictitious scenario. But it would be interesting, I don't know, to like somehow incorporate that. And like,
well, they definitely were. So one of the things they were using, I want to say it's Winlink. They're actually sending email to each other over ham radio.
Over ham.
So
that's cool.
When riders would approach, they would take down like what time they showed up and with their rider number, and then they would send or submit that to the central control people via Winlink.
Yeah,
so that was like one more thing they were incorporating, because they could have done it over the air.
Sure.
I mean, I guess they did technically, but they could have done it like
like
their
voice to voice,
but they submitted it through there just as a kind of a practice. And also,
sure.
And some people weren't able to get that working. So they were, So they were just actually doing it over voice.
Yeah.
But it was kind of cool. I sadly didn't hear the whole thing because I had plans for that day, but
well,
it was awesome
know.
To listen to the start of it. And it kind of brought back some of the memories of working Cycle Oregon, because
nice.
That's a good group, group too.
Now, going back to the Cycle Oregon scenario, and you're communicating, you know, via whatever, is there like, you know, say I'm got my ham radio, me and my buddy are out. Is there like an emergency band that you use, or was it just like through your small network that you have there?
Through the small network. Okay. Yeah. CycleOrgan uses a directed net. So similar to what was happening on Sunday or Saturday with the disaster relief trials, although less complex because we just use simplex, which is literally you're transmitting on the same frequency you're receiving, so it's one person can talk at a time. And there's no repeaters, so the person sitting on the mountaintop is the repeater.
Oh, gotcha.
So there are actually people
like
on
a vocal
course.
Repeater.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so there's no emergency band because that is the frequency you talk on if there's an emergency. There are, CycleOrgan specifically has a commercial band if you need to contact the people who aren't hams on course. But most of the time, the SAG vehicles don't have to hop on there. So they relay everything over ham to net control, and net control will talk over the commercial bands too, especially because the commercial radios aren't as powerful or have as much range. So you might not actually be able to talk to the ambulance that's talking to you, but the person on the mountaintop can. So there's just like when there is an emergency that happens like that, they kind of interrupt all of the communications and say like, okay, we need to deal with this emergency right now, which they would do anyways, but having to switch frequencies or anything like that, no, we don't need to do that. And I'm sure disaster relief trials was like, if there were any emergencies,
right,
there'd be,
as far as I know, like no one really got hurt.
No. And they told us like, call 911.
Yeah.
That
right.
It was like number one, like if that's an option.
Right.
I thought that was kind of funny at first. Like, you are allowed to call 911 in a real emergency.
No, it's part of the game, man. No, this guy, he's got a concussion. We got to figure out what we're going to do about it.
Right.
But no, that's not for the guy with the concussion, not a game.
Right.
Yeah. So, well, how would people get into ham if they're interested in amateur radio, but they don't know where to start? What would you recommend?
Probably go to Google and search for ham radio training.
Type in ham radio. Okay,
yes.
Yeah.
ARRL.org is the kind of organizing body in the U.S. There's
hamstudy.org, I think, is what the practice test that I've been taking. Yeah. And then if you just look up a ham radio manual PDF in a Google search, you can find like all sorts of publications right down to
that
ham.
Might be copyrighted.
They're there. I'm just telling you, like, it's your search engine, man.
You should look for the things that are freely available in a legal manner.
But I found a copy of Ham Radio for Dummies.
Yeah. In no way should you download copyrighted material.
I didn't download it.
Sale.
It's right there.
That would be wrong.
I just read it.
We can't endorse that. We can't say that you should.
I can't get it in trouble for reading what's already published.
No. But that being said,
I'm sorry, I'm slightly trolling.
What do people actually troll on ham radio? Like, is there a what does that look like?
Yes, there is a repeater in Los Angeles that they're very pro free speech.
Okay,
so they have actually had fights with the FCC about
really?
Some of the behaviors and activities that go on the repeater, and one actually, which is really interesting. So it might be entirely illegal to play music, but don't like that repeater.
It's at least a dick move.
Yes.
Well, it ties up the frequency, right? And that's part of the idea, right? Is that this is supposed to be a free exchange of information for people who need it, as opposed to FM radio. Like, there's plenty enough FM radio out there playing stuff you don't want to hear all day.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And
it's not what ham is for.
Yeah, ham is in a lot of ways like practice for if you needed to do this like in real life, and not just like in a disaster situation or whatever, but say you kind of are aspiring to be an actual radio operator for something, or you want to build antennas or something like that. This gives you the space to be able to experiment with that without having to work for a company that has a commercial license that can, which are probably very expensive, that can open up some frequencies there, and then you have restrictions. It's like, oh, you've got this little playground. You can try to talk to Brazil if you want to with, you know, a $20 antenna that you built out of some speaker wire. And
go ahead, see if I care.
Coax. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's really cool. And people, they do really interesting things with antenna design and transmitters. And, you know, these are commercially available radios that I have, but once you're, and I think those are that's when amateur extra comes into play, is if you're building your own radios.
Oh, right.
That was one of the things that really surprised me about the practice tests, was how much electronics knowledge mm-hmm. Really goes into it. And this is just the technician's exam.
Yeah.
You know, knowing what, not just what a capacitor is and what it does, but like what that looks like on a schematic.
Right.
Even.
Yeah. Did either of you have the Radio Shack 201 project lab?
I did not.
In which they gave you,
it's
like,
it's basically like a board, right?
Yeah. They give you a big like square.
Plug and play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's got all the components on it, and you make the connections by schematic or by, like, you know, you attach wire A to wire B, et cetera, et cetera. But all these terminals connect all these various parts, and you could build yourself, like, you could probably build with that lab, an amateur radio. I don't know, but yeah, that's the sort of thing that it makes me think of, because yeah, at some point they're saying, hey, you you have to know how to do it too,
right?
How to make one.
Well, and a lot of that goes from what I can tell, it goes into troubleshooting your own radio.
Sure.
And not necessarily taking it apart or whatever, but like knowing, like, oh, the, you know, I'm getting this weird sound, or someone's reporting this weird sound in my transmission. You know, maybe it means like my battery's dying, or maybe, like, you know, there is a piece, you know, kind of a faulty wiring in there.
If you want to be a doctor, you have to know how to look at somebody's elbow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good.
And not to make it sound scary, most of the time you don't actually need to know any of that stuff.
No.
For
most
sure.
of it, it's like push the button on the side of the radio and here's how you program it.
Right.
At least if you're doing the stuff that I mostly have done, and the stuff that I'm very interested in, which is like emergency comms or event logistics support.
And I want to clear this up, because it never came up in the quiz, but I heard this somewhere in like a first aid class or something. Is it true that you can purchase a ham radio and just listen in without a license?
Yep. Yes. You can listen in to, I think the wording of the law, or the idea behind it, is if it falls in your backyard, you can listen to it. So even if it's a frequency that you normally either, you know, quote,
once
shouldn't
the garbage
be listening
is
to
out on the street, it's public property.
Right. Yeah. Yes. So like police bands and that sort of thing. These, since they're commercially available, the FCC regulates the sale of, or commercial sale of, any radios that can transmit or receive on frequencies that shouldn't be able to.
So you have to have a license to buy one?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's more that, like, these can't listen on analog cell phones.
Ah.
If they existed, they can't, because it just won't tune to that frequency.
Okay.
And that's just a limitation in the software of the, or in the software of the device. And that's because if you build your own radio, or even modify this one to do that, it's totally legal. They just can't sell it readily available as being able to do that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you were to transmit on those frequencies, you're breaking the law.
There you go. So be advised.
Yeah. Be advised. don't do that.
Yeah, of course. Very good. Well, is there anything else about ham that you'd like to share? Anything that, like, I'm curious, particularly a personal experience. Like, when did you think, hey, I'm doing this, this is cool?
Probably when I got in the SAG vehicle on the weekend ride, and I was the person manning the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was like, well, I mean, my driver was also a ham, but she was driving, you know, like, every now and then, like, if I would get out, she would respond if I was doing something like getting coffee, which did happen a couple times. But otherwise, I was like, wow, I'm here. I'm doing this.
Yeah.
This is kind of cool.
Yeah. So, yeah. We should say, for the record, she was also a professionally licensed ham radio.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. I guess the last thing on my mind is, have you ever sent a message back in time to your father to prevent a murder, a la the movie Frequency?
Oh, is that a plot of a movie? No,
yeah.
I haven't.
Have you seen that one, Aaron?
No.
Jim Caviezel, but, before he was Jesus.
Right. Yeah. And before he was like that guy that murders murderers
right.
before they murder.
What a career, right?
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, anyways, that was it was him and Dennis Quaid, and they were talking like from 1960 to 1990 or something like that.
Have you also tried to talk to your dead father, you know, via transmission, and then aliens came and gave you schematics to build a spaceship, that you then subsequently rode. Well, the second version. The first version broke down, but the second version was secretly built in Japan. And then you rode that one. And then these aliens took the form of your father. Has that ever happened?
No.
No. Okay.
Okay. So don't worry.
I've never tried to communicate with gravity waves through a bookshelf either. So. I mean, I guess I can't say I haven't tried, but I haven't been successful at it.
Never do it without Hans Zimmer standing on an organ.
Yes.
All right.
Or Michael Caine reciting bad poetry.
Jeremy, thank you so much for coming in. Do you have time to hang out with us for mail and news?
Absolutely.
Cool.
Awesome.
All right. Well, with that, here come your headlines.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. It circles around the city light.
All right, up on the calendar. Also, I just wanted to say for the record, I just remember this looking at our notes. I was thinking about this. The only reason why Team Japan lost to us was because we knew the streets better.
I suppose so.
They were
right.
Rolling in at every checkpoint just as we were rolling out.
That's right, yeah.
Like if they had known the streets as well as we did,
they were looking at maps more often
us.
Than we did. Yes, yes, indeed. Yeah. No, in all ways, they should have won.
Yeah. Okay. So I just wanted to state that for the record.
It's good to make sure that's clear.
First up on our calendar, until October 30th, Drew the Welder's watercolors are on display at Crema Cafe.
Where they serve coffee.
That is on 27th and Ankeny.
Yeah.
I used to go there quite a bit. I don't as much anymore.
Well, you don't commute through there anymore.
Now I've got a reason. Yeah, yeah. Well, there's that too. Now we've got a reason to, though.
For sure. Well, it's a cool coffee shop, for one. It's a great spot.
Yeah.
And I would say it's one of the hipper coffee shops in town. Like, this is where all the people should be getting their coffee.
Yeah. It's not too hip, though.
No. It's not too cool for school.
It's
a good
definitely
spot.
Very busy.
Yes.
A lot.
Yeah.
I live really close to there. So.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
You got to know what you're ordering. You know, it's like the soup Nazi. You step up, you order, you step to the side.
A little bit. Yeah.
But the watercolors, they look good. Again, I've seen them through the window several times since we first learned of that. And I need to, I need to go inside.
Also, all month is Walktober.
Walktober.
Get out and walk, everybody.
That's right.
I don't care if it's raining.
Yep.
You'll actually, like, probably not get as wet walking as you would riding your bike anyway.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I think you know what I'm going to do. I'm going to walk once I move to my new place.
Oh, you're going
to walk
to work?
I'm going to walk to work, yeah, because it'll be in October.
You bastard.
Yes, thank you.
You've, like, well, I don't know. You deserve this. You've cut your
epithets
commute.
Thrown
like,
at me?
No. You deserve this shorter commute.
Thank you.
Because
I feel like I've put in my time. God damn it.
Well, yeah. You've like cut it like what? By 2/3.
I've shortened my commute from 12 miles every day to 2 miles every day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes. Well,
it's the good life, people. It's the good life.
Just remember, no more tortillas in your lunch.
Yep. Mm-hmm. No more beer, right?
Oh, yeah. Good
luck. It's going to suck.
Also, October 29th is the Trick or Treat Ride.
Trick or Treat Ride.
That's right here in Portland at the Doll Asylum.
The Doll Asylum.
If you don't know what the Doll Asylum is,
I don't.
You should.
Okay.
Oh, really? You don't?
No, I don't. What is it?
I'm sorry. I just realized what I sound like.
It's on 6315 North Michigan Avenue.
Yeah, it's really creepy.
Okay.
It is kind of what it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. It's an asylum for crazy dolls.
It's a bunch of dolls in a building.
I would hate that.
Yeah,
I would hate that.
I'm surprised you haven't seen this. Like, I've ridden by this a few times, and every time I ride by that, it just creeps me out. But
Michigan Avenue
it's
is
a great place for a Halloween trick or treat ride.
Yes, yeah. Either of you guys listen to Snap Judgment? WNYC now produces it. Used to be NPR.
Okay.
But it's Glenn Washington, who our friend Steph Routh from the Why Isn't Anyone Talking About This podcast. She got the chance to interview Glenn Washington some time back. Not on that show, but on something else.
Oh.
Anyways, I think one of the most recent episodes, they're leading up to their Halloween special. And so they had like 3 or 4 stories about creepy dolls.
Oh, okay.
And I swear, if you want to be creeped out at the Halloween season, Snap Judgment does it well. They open every podcast with the liner. What is it like? And whatever you do, don't listen alone.
Oh, really?
And it's funny because everybody listens to podcasts alone. So, yeah. You feel transgressive as you're being scared.
Well, one thing I want to talk about with this ride is they're going to do a tour of the Lone Fir Cemetery.
Oh, yes. This is the,
and the tour is $10, $5 for kids, $15 at the gate, and all sales benefit the cemetery itself.
Jeremy, do you know about this?
The cemetery? Or
yeah.
The,
yeah.
Yeah, I live really close to it.
Okay. Oh, right. Have you been on the tour before?
No.
Okay.
I've been through there several times. But.
They give tours every Halloween season leading up to All Hallows Eve. They've got people who will – aren't they like historical actors? Like they'll
No! Really?
They'll personify some of these dead people that you're
what
touring the cemetery.
What is a horseshoe?
Exactly.
What do horseshoes do?
I am Dr. Hawthorne. I don't know. Like all these things. Like it sounds great. I've still never done it. So this
is
one of those things.
What is this thing you call polyester?
It is uncomfortable. This causes me to chafe.
This is my whole like historical reenactment character.
like a
just
misplaced in time.
Questioning modern modern names and modern
computer
items.
Yeah.
Also, October 31st is the Halloween bike ride.
Halloween.
Yes. 5:30 at the North Courtyard of. It just says one North Courtyard. That's 3529 North Williams Avenue.
Oh, North. I think isn't that the building right across from the New Seasons in North Portland, like between Williams and Vancouver Avenue?
Well, yes, it says across from the New Seasons.
Oh, yes. Okay. There we go.
And I mentioned that because it's put on Rihanna and PJ.
Oh, nice.
So
good bike people
from
Portland.
Yes, and lots of cool sound systems, I'm sure.
Yes.
And December,
will they play Thriller on the sound system at some point?
You know, I bet...
I would be disappointed if they did not.
Right. But then again, like, I could also see them going like, this is played out. We're not going to do Thriller.
Except I've heard Thriller coming out of PJ's bike so many times. So many times.
What if he just puts that on loop?
Like, this is the Thriller ride. Yeah. Not the album, the song.
Yep, just the song.
December 11th, Kimmy Cross,
which
we mentioned earlier, at the Beer Mongers at Southeast Division and 12th.
Go compete. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll hit you with a Nerf dart or something.
Yes, and good luck and wishes. Three wishes. And Gainesville, Florida in February.
February 27th, Gainesville, Florida. It's not as far as you think it's going to be. The Menagerie in Motion Kinetic Derby.
Yes, Joseph down in Gainesville, Florida. He sent this to us, which is a good reminder that if you're still listening, if you didn't tune
anybody,
out after the interview
anywhere.
Was over, you got...
you made it this far.
You got an event. Tell us what's happening, because the Sprocket Podcast Contingency wants to know where should people go, wherever they are.
Yes.
So, yes. Thank you, Joseph, for sending that to us. Menagerie in Motion, February 27th.
Yay!
Gainesville, Florida. Also other things. So, with that, what's the news?
We got some headlines.
Yes.
I've got two pieces of mail. One little angsty, one nice. So we'll get the little angsty one out first.
So I hear Peabot is cash strapped.
Yes. Says this is coming from the Portland Mercury. Cash strapped Peabot doesn't want your free crosswalks.
I was about to offer. So what's going on here?
So this is a little bit of local news. I'm sure you've heard of this, Jeremy. I'm sure you've probably heard of this. PDX Bureau of Transformation. Not PDX Bureau of Transportation. It's a few well-intentioned, idealistic, very...
they're idealists, but they're rogues.
The words, like, don't... I can't think of the exact...
How can you say it nicely? Is that what you're thinking?
No. Because I love these guys.
Yeah, yeah. They're activists.
They're activists.
In the best sense of the word.
And they've put in at least one gorilla crosswalk.
Not strictly legal.
No.
Yeah.
No, in fact, not legal at all.
Right.
And this is the sort of the crux of this article is that this one in particular on Clinton, which leads up to a preschool, a new Portland public schools preschool. Bureau of Transformation put in this crosswalk because they saw this is a path to school.
It's a place where people walk across the street.
And they saw a need. They filled it because...
They filled it with paint?
Because the Bureau of Transportation is cash-strapped.
Ah.
And, yeah. And so, yes, they painted their own crosswalk.
Okay.
So PBOT, the official...
Uh-huh. The real
took
ones.
Took it down.
As it were.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, PBOT has spent a lot of time taking down things that are really good ideas.
Well, yes.
Like the first Clinton diverters.
This is sort of the crux of the argument is like, so these people or this bureau says like, hey, we don't have the money to put in any more safety infrastructure. And then these great guerrilla safety activists come out and say, okay, we'll put some in. And then PBOT says, okay, now we got to use our money to take out your safety infrastructure.
Right, right. And so that there are
the money that they're not spending on safety infrastructure is actually being double spent on taking out the safety infrastructure.
So who do you complain against and who do you complain to?
Right.
Right?
Right.
And it could go either way.
And, you know, Steve Novick, who I, for the most part, have some respect for.
I largely respect. I put his name on my ballot.
Does quote, like, the drivers don't always respect marked crosswalks, and it creates a false sense of security and could lead to more crashes. I might say, while I respect you, Mr. Novick, I also respectfully disagree. Mm-hmm. I think no crosswalks probably leads to more crashes than marked crosswalks.
No news is good news.
I have no data to back this up. But
no
you
data
know what?
Is good data.
You know what? You haven't brought any either. So
sure.
So, Mr. Novick, if you're listening, I know you're not, but still, I would love to hear like some kind of like proof.
Don't bring any chalk to a paint fight.
Right.
Yeah. I would like to see some way in which, if there was only some way, because there's this thing where they call them desire trails, right, or something like that. Where if people show up and they start walking a path, you see like pedestrian activity happens in places where people desire that.
Right.
And in places where there's no pavement, it appears as like a rut. Like there's like this little dirt path because people have worn the grass away because they walk there all the time.
So we need to wear the asphalt away on the road.
Or we need to like drop, you know, paint or chalk on the street as we walk across them. Hey, I just, you know...
See,
In no way would I advocate this. In
this
no
is
way
actually
should anyone
a pretty good
do
idea.
This.
Like if you have like sort of a train of people and like, you know, the few up front drop chalk and then the people like as they're going like are stepping on said chalk, you've now like created this marked trail.
Let me clarify. The defacing of public property is wrong.
This is a hypothetical.
It should not be done
by
anyone.
What if?
Yes. But that being said, if you just had a rattle can, you just like shake the thing up and then you like spray as you walk across the street. I mean, you know, that's a desire trail.
If it just accidentally went off, like
sure.
I was carrying the spray paint to somewhere else.
Can't be held responsible for cans that go off while they're strapped to your hip.
Yes.
In no way would we say you should do this. That would be wrong. But I think there is something to be said for if this is a natural desire trail. And maybe something should be done to recognize that.
And I will say, like, I understand there is maybe, like, some protectionism. You don't want to just, like, I don't know.
Willy-nilly. It's not as if every intersection is a crosswalk.
But here's the thing. Like, effectively, that hasn't happened.
Also, every intersection is a crosswalk.
I was about to say.
Well, I mean, like, yeah. Yeah. Well, yes, there is that.
Right.
Legally, Oregon state law.
Is this one particular instance that is being spoken of in this article, is that something that was a mid-block crossing? Is it like, is it a place where two streets do not intersect?
So, it does, I believe it dead ends into the school.
Okay. Right. So, this is a desire trail at a place that is not a legal crosswalk. I'm not saying you should paint the street.
I'm going to claim ignorance on that because I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, I don't know either. But but it's an interesting situation. It gives you food for thought. So, yes, on a lighter note,
from actually BromptonBikes.com.
Yes.
I might be misquoting that website.
And graphic designer.
Yes, from our graphic designer.
We own him.
Marcus Norman.
Every piece and all of his assets. I'm kidding.
Cycling in Chicago, Brompton does profiles on like they're bike owners.
Brompton, the folding bike manufacturer.
Yes.
From England.
And they picked Marcus Norman for their latest profile.
How about that?
Yeah. It's
good for
really
him.
Cool. And so I want to read this quote because I think it's great.
Yeah.
It kind of showcases Portland in a pretty positive light. He says, as far as how I got into Brompton's, as a designer, I've forever admired the innovative and longstanding design of the Brompton. When my wife and I took a trip to Portland one summer.
Was that 2013?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah. We rented two Bromptons from Clever Cycles. It was perfectly practical, lots of fun, and a great opportunity to test ride. A week after that trip, I bought mine.
There we go.
Yes.
Yeah. It's another happy Clever Cycles customer.
Yeah, that's right.
That was before Anna worked there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Good times.
It's like a BCAD sort of thing.
Right.
That's great. Congratulations, Marcus. And thank you again. Marcus made the podcast logo that you see on your screen, the one that you see on the sticker that is lovingly applied somewhere to your bike, or, we would not tell you to put that on a public signage piece of any kind. That would be wrong.
Right.
But also on the patches that many of you have been mailed.
I can't control where you put these stickers.
Right. We won't tell you to do that. That would be wrong, ethically and morally.
Yes.
But yes, indeed. So anyway, super cool.
They won't let you sing on ham radio either. So yeah.
Even if you have a melodious voice. Marcus is that melodious voice to us. So thank you, Marcus. We appreciate that. That's not a metaphor.
Sorry, Jerry.
Don't extrapolate.
Just couldn't help myself.
Well, we may not have melodious voices. We may not
Speak
have...
Speak for yourself, sir.
Yes. We may not have rattle cans that we carry at our hips to mark crosswalks, because that would be wrong. But what we do have...
We got mail. Hey, we got mail.
First up, from Josh G., he shares with us a train movie.
Yes.
With zombies.
Right, Train to Busan. That was... he posted this a couple weeks ago, I think. And I saw the trailer, and I thought, wow, that looks interesting. I would like to see that. And then Armando... got in touch with me and said, hey, would you like to go see a movie? I can't go.
And it was this?
It was this movie, Train to Busan. So,
where was it playing?
Hollywood Theater.
Oh,
right now,
okay.
It should still be there. If you're anywhere in Portland within the reach of our voices, you can probably go see that within the next week or so. If not, it was a good show.
Next up, Jim G. rode Death Valley. Rode
yes.
55 miles of Death Valley last Saturday. At JDRF Ride. Amazing, mystical, intense.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. It also sounds warm, but it's not like the warm season anymore. I'm not sure how warm it was there. The picture that he sent was, it looked warm. What, like
was
the sun
it
was
snowy?
Out.
Oh.
No, it wasn't
warm.
Snowy. Oh. Yeah, that was sand.
I think that would be amazing. I would love to do that.
Yeah.
And soon I'm going to have a bike that might be able to do that.
That's right. Your Pugsley?
Yes.
Nice.
Yes, it's finally coming together.
Yeah.
With anodized purple trim.
Oh, there you go. Perfect. Yeah. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Jeremy, you spent some time in L.A.
Yes.
So, Death Valley, what's your take?
I have not been there. I really want to go there.
Uh-huh.
But as far as heat in the summer or in the winter, it's probably still pretty warm.
Okay.
I rode a Century in Palm Springs in February, and it was over 100 degrees.
Palm Springs to some would be Death Valley. Yeah.
Yes.
So,
yes,
it's close enough. Yikes. Hot. How do you do in heat?
I do a lot better in heat than I do in the sun.
Okay.
So if it's 95 degrees outside, but I'm in shade, I'm okay. But if
right.
it's 85 and I'm in the sun, oh, it's brutal.
Yeah. Humidity? Is that a factor
I
for you?
I grew up in Iowa, so.
Okay. You're fine.
No, not really.
No, you that's why you're not in Iowa.
I'm spoiled now is
okay.
what I am. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
After 10 years in Los Angeles and there's no humidity, you know.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next up from Joe Beal, this interview. Oh, speaking of our interview in Bicycle Times.
Yes.
This interview made me like Brock and Aaron more. He also mentions that he can't find me on Facebook.
I wonder why that would be.
You can't find me on Facebook mobile. I'm just on the mobile version. I'm just not findable.
You got to dig deep.
Yes. You also can't find me on Facebook stationery either.
No, true.
I mean, except the stationery that I made with the Facebook logo.
With the logo, the letterhead. Facebook letterhead, you're all over that.
Right.
Yeah.
anyways, sorry, Joe. I didn't know I could like them more.
That's nice of him to say.
Yes, that is high praise indeed.
Yeah. Joe Beal from Microcosm Publishing. We've had him on several times. He's a cool dude.
Yep.
And the article about Bicycle Times about us, it's up.
Yeah.
I think there was some window of time. I didn't realize they were going to publish on the internet, but they did. So the print copy was out for a couple of months, and then they put the article itself up for everyone to read on the web. So if you did not get your print copy, you should, but at the same time, it's there.
Yeah.
It's on the internet. You can read it.
Now you don't need it in print.
Also, speaking of cool.
Yes. PBJ Matt says, Peanut Butter Jar Matt says that overalls are cool.
Apparently we were decrying, decrying overalls.
Forgive me for not remembering which episode this occurred in.
I don't remember either.
As I was catching up after vacation, but Brock made a comment that overalls were never and never will be cool, and I beg to differ as evidence in the photo below.
And those are pretty good overalls.
That is TLC. Don't go chasing waterfalls right there.
Yeah, they're solid colors. They're all primary colors. I can't argue with that.
Never forget left eye. I guess I already did that part.
You did that at the beginning of the show, pouring kombucha.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Tim on Twitter.
Tim on Twitter says, E-City Bike Mom, ski goggles are quite handy for the winter months and listening to podcasts. A bunch of ads.
Yeah. He mentions
us.
Yeah, Sprocket Podcast, 99% Invisible, which is a great podcast, Revisionist History, and I'm not sure what Spark CBC is, but I assume it's a podcast. But does
I would
that mean
it's from Canada?
Probably. Ski goggles are quite handy for the winter months and listening. So if you have ski goggles on, that means you can listen to more podcasts.
Yes.
Because you're riding in the cold.
Yes.
Maybe. Okay. Yeah, but I think E-City Mom was saying that I don't know about this cold. I'm not sure if I can ride in it. And Tim said ski goggles. That's where it's at. So,
man, I still don't know if I can ride in the cold, but
Phil
I do.
Phil in Alaska would know something about that.
Yeah, I guess I shouldn't complain.
That's okay. And he's the guy with the ice beard and the goggles. So, yeah. Speaking of Tim's, not this Tim, but another Tim. Tim from the Pedal Shift project. He gives us so many shouts out. I would like to return the favor and just say hi, Tim.
Shout out.
Everyone
How's
should listen
going,
to
Tim?
The Pedal Shift project, pedalshift.net.
Yes.
Yeah. There's like four different
and
versions
we have,
of that.
We have a friend going to DC.
That's right. Who might or
so
might not
Tim,
get
if you're
in touch.
Listening, you should look up our mutual friend, Guthrie.
Yeah.
He may not or he may get the time to interview, but I'm sure you guys would have a good time.
Maybe.
Anyways.
Yeah. I figure this is the most direct way for me to communicate with Tim.
Isn't it? Oh, this is sad.
So, yeah. And then Russell.
Russell says, Sprocket IPA, very tasty. I'd been listening to episode 319 on the train to Nottingham. For the massive annual beer fest, about 1,000 beers and cider, many fresh hop beers available.
Yes,
and there he is.
The Sprocket IPA, which I don't know where that's from, if that's something that I feel like I've
not
seen
a clue.
It. I feel like it's an American that maybe made its way to Nottingham, but I'm not sure.
I'm not going to look it up right now.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a plan. And with that, we bring our show to a close. So, Jeremy, is there anything else that you had in your mind?
Not really.
Okay.
I like how you actually took a second to take some inventory. Yeah. Is there anything?
there is one thing. If you are interested in disaster response at all, even if it's not ham radio, you should definitely go to ready.gov and put together an emergency plan, an emergency preparedness kit at the very least.
Right.
Even if you don't live in the Pacific Northwest.
Yes. Because disasters can happen everywhere.
For sure. Yeah. And if the
earthquakes happen in Iowa, tornadoes happen in Oregon, it's who knows?
Yeah.
That's true, man. It's it's all going crazy now.
Well. If the Timbers win, you want your go bags ready.
Or if the Cubs win.
right. I guess the Cubs are on their way, aren't they?
Yes. Armageddon will happen.
Yes.
If the Cubs win.
Danger.
I'm just kidding. I kind of hope they win,
actually.
You're
going to light up
Wrigley so
Field with candles and such?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So here comes the end of the show. Marcus, we don't mean that. I mean, yes, we do. We hope the Cubs win. We hope there's no disaster.
No, I really do hope the Cubs win. Like, it's just been so long.
Go Chicago.
But it probably will bring
out hustling
the end of the world.
Everybody else.
All right. And with that, it's the end. Our website is thesprocketpodcast.com.
Email to thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Call or text to 503-847-9774.
Twitter @sprocketpodcast.
Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music.
Herb Bird for our headline sounder.
Marcus Norman in Chicago for graphic design.
And thanks to sustaining donors Logan Smith, Johnny K. Shadowfoot,
Katharina Mellengard, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson,
Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson,
Cameron Lane, Richard Buzinski, Tim Mooney,
Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubish, Matt Kelly,
Jim Gooden, Eric Weiss, Doug Cohen Miller,
Todd Parker, Chris Gonzalez, Dan Gebhardt,
Zoe Campagna, Dave Knows, Chris Smith,
Christy Kaster, Caleb Jenkinson, J.P. Culey,
Peanut Butter Jar Matt, Patrick Archane,
congratulations, J.P., Marco Lowe, Rich Otterstrom, Andrew in Colorado,
Sebastian Poole, Drew the Welder, Anna, Krista,
John Wasserman, Andre Johnson, King of Division,
Josh Zissen, Richard G., Guthrie Straw,
Brandon Shelby, Campsite, Aaron Green,
Mac Nurse David, Catherine Minchin, Nathan Bolton,
Chris Rawson, Rory in Michigan, Michael Flournoyd,
Jeremy Kitchen, right here. Yes. Yay. David Belais, Tim Coleman,
Mr. T, Harry Hugel, Ed Whitman,
EJ Finneran, Paul Culbertson, if that's your name, and Subvert.
And all of our former donors who helped us get this far. Now brush your teeth.
And go to bed.